there's probably been a time in each of our lives that we felt like Job, as if one or more thing happened, it would be more than we could take. If you haven't felt that way yet, you will at some point. Life is just like that. There are times when we're on top of the world feeling like $1 million, like the world is our oyster and everything is falling in place just as it should. There are other times when life hits hard, when the world and its woes seem to be crashing down on top of us. Maybe that happens when our bodies seem to turn against us with cancer or heart attack or memory loss or any number of things. Maybe it happens when people we depend on the most leave us high and dry. Maybe it happens when we lose a loved one or our financial resources disappear. Maybe several of those things happen at the same time, and at those times we relate well to Job. We too wonder the age-old question of why bad things happen to good people and why it sometimes seems that the most conniving people come out seemingly unwounded and scar-free. If we review our lives, we probably discover that no matter how many hardships we've endured, they still don't add up to the situation that Job found himself in. Job not only lost everything he had in terms of livestock, property, and possessions, he also lost his children and found himself covered in boils. It really doesn't get much worse than that. And the hardest part of the whole tale of Job is the way it begins, with some sort of divine challenge. God, who is very proud of the uprightness and faithfulness of Job, allows Satan to torment him. And somehow that just doesn't seem to ring true. What kind of God would be so heartless to allow Satan to torment a perfectly good man? Is that the kind of God we should worship? I can't say that I find this God in any way worthy of praise. Personally, I think it would just be better to ignore that God altogether. There are no easy answers to these sorts of questions, and that's in part what we can learn from Job. But it's helpful to understand Job as a story that addresses the questions of why bad things happen to good people rather than a story about God's allowing Satan to torment Job. That aspect of the story is how it was understood by the people who were trying to make sense of the inexplicable. People just like us who just don't understand why horrible things happen in the world. Job is going down his history as one who was patient. We've probably all heard the term the patience of Job, referring to someone who has endured a lot of problems. But I'm here to tell you that Job was not exactly patient. Yes, he endured, and he did not falter in his faith, but he wasn't patient. He wanted the situation to change, and he wanted it to change immediately. He wanted some answers from God on why he had been stricken with such great calamity. And for the longest time, he questioned and questioned and was given no response. Early on, three of Job's friends came to be with him in his time of trial. And early on, these friends, Eliphaz, Bildad, and Zophar, did exactly the right thing. They came to Job and they sat with him. They didn't bring any casseroles. They didn't send nice cards. They were merely with him. They didn't offer any advice or suggestions. They were just there with Job in his suffering. And that is exactly the right thing to do. So often we want to do something when those around us are hurting. We want to fix it. But most of the time we can't. And most of the time, the only thing that is needed is a ministry of presence. Just be there. Nothing more. Unfortunately, Job's friends grew tired of just being with him. They expected a quick resolution to this problem, and when that didn't happen, they began to offer advice, which is always the wrong thing to do. They, in natural human form, started to look for blame, for reasons that Job was in this situation. Rather than just being present with Job in his pain, they began to want to move on, to fix it. So they each devised carefully orchestrated plans for how Job could get right with God. And we do that too. We search and search for reasons that things happen when the fact of the matter is that the reason is ultimately irrelevant. Have you ever learned of someone who is diagnosed with lung cancer without thinking whether or not she or he smoked? Have you ever heard of a late night car accident without wondering if alcohol was involved? And while those things are certainly factors at the time of the diagnosis or the event of the accident, and perhaps relevant, it doesn't change the fact that the event has occurred. And for Job, as in the case for so many others who suffer, there is no direct line to trace the end to the reason. Life just is, and tragedies just happen. And so do great joys. It's interesting to me how we scour the evidence to search for the reason for the tragedy, but accept joy as if it's our due. So try as Job's friends might, and they did, there was still no reason. Job denied every accusation and grew quite weary of his once true friend's accusations, but that still was not the end of it. Job's wife, his partner in life, the one who had promised to be with him till death do they part, told him he should curse God and die. That's not a really terribly supportive thing to say. But one thing is so often overlooked in this story is that not only did Job suffer all this loss, so did his wife. If he had nothing, she had even less. And furthermore, those children were hers too. She, in fact, had given birth to each and every one of them and had probably spent more time caring for them and keeping them safe to this point, only to have them struck down. This is not only the story of Job's suffering, it's her suffering as well, and she deals with her suffering in a much more common way than does Job. She gets mad. She is furious. And she takes it out on God. And with the way this story begins, she doesn't seem to be too far off base in that. But the thing is, God can handle it. God knows how angry she is. And while that is not discussed in this story, we hear in the end that all that Job had was restored. And not only that, but was doubled. He also has more children. And since we're not told that his wife ever left him, actually, or died, we might presume that she was the mother to these children. And that not only was Job restored, but his wife was restored as well. Still, what we want, and what Job wanted, and his wife, and his friends, and all of humanity wants to know, is why? Why is it that horrible things happen? And finally, after much pleading, explaining, cajoling, demanding, and begging, the Lord answered Job out of a whirlwind. He answers Elijah in silence, but Job in a whirlwind. He comes to each of us in a way we can relate. The point is that God is present and presents himself. And God tells Job to gird up his loins and act like a man. Here, God sounds like a coach of sorts. Buck up. Be tough. Stop your sniveling and listen. God says, "Where were you when I laid the foundations of the earth? Tell me if you have understanding." And he goes on to rather upbraid Job. And this is pretty uncomfortable because we can really feel for Job. We want God to apologize for all Job's suffering, but he doesn't. And furthermore, God gives Job no reason. He doesn't say, it's okay, Job, just sit down, relax, and I'll explain this all to you. This is going to work out fine. It was just a little test, a little tete-a-tete between me and Satan. What he says is, I am God. I've been here all along. I created everything that is, even you. And I am here now. Even in all of your hardships, you don't have answers. You won't have the answers. But you have me, and I am here, have always been here, and will always be here. And we don't have the answers, not ultimately. Pointing fingers and looking to find fault and blame for the hardships and tragedies in the world does no good. There are no magic wands, no quick fixes, but there is God. Always with us, always here, always there, from the beginning of time to the end. God is our strength and our salvation. Amen.